am so overjoyed to be welcoming back one of my dearest guests I've had on this podcast, a man whose name is synonymous with craftsmanship and one that I'm very proud to call a friend. Of course, it's the utterly wonderful Jay Blades MBE. Jay and I last spoke at the height of the first lockdown when we were all adjusting to what we call the new normal. But the passage of time hasn't done anything, actually the opposite, to dampening down Jay's enthusiasm and passion for all that he stands for. And my goodness, it was so good to talk to a gentleman that ultimately is leading a revolution in kindness. Now, it's been brought to us in many, many forms and many mediums, and we see him on TV. But in Jay, there lies this goodness, this calmness, this clearness about how we can connect. He calls himself a community leader, community manager. It is all about community. And Jay's enthusiasm and energy is infectious. So I so hope you can find a quiet moment, maybe at a workbench, in the car, on a walk. Look at the sun, look at the sky, and soak up Jay. Enjoy.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I founded my first business, Not on the High Street, at 28, with a newborn strapped to my chest. Nearly 20 years on, he's all grown up, and I'm running my second business, Holly & Co. I've learned so much about taking risks, running a business, and some extraordinary life lessons along the way. And I know others have too. Yet despite the wealth of experience we have between us, lessons like this are often left unheard, and it can feel like we're travelling our paths alone. So I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. If you enjoyed this episode, might I ask you to share it with a friend and to like, subscribe, and review it so that together we can ignite people's passion across the UK. Now, let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Jay, I can't tell you how happy I am to see you, you gorgeous, gorgeous human being.
Oh, bless your cotton socks. Bless
Welcome you. Back to Conversations of Inspiration.
Well, I am happy to see you, and I am so chuffed that we're able to reconnect again. It's a shame that we're not hugging, holding hands.
I know.
Sharing a cup of tea together.
I know. I want to make you a cup of tea. You haven't got any milk. But do you know that, in fact, the last time we spoke properly was in lockdown?
Yeah.
Because we did something on SME SOS where we were helping out small businesses during that time. But before then, you and I sat down. It was in the beginning of 2019 for our podcast. So can you believe that is how long it's been since we've had a hug?
That is unbelievable.
Isn't that unbelievable? And I remember it to this day. We sat in that booth, do you remember? And we had that chat.
Yeah. And it was up at the Angel, wasn't it? In Islington.
Yeah. And how things have changed, Jay, because you've been pretty busy. You've been awarded an MBE for your services to craft. You've been jiving on Strictly Come Dancing. You have a brand new show, Dave and Jay's Touring Tool Shed. And of course, you have been welcomed the King Charles himself, for a very special episode of Repair Shop. And I have been sitting, I mean, I text you now and again, I have been sitting on the sidelines watching this this Jay. Just from when we spoke in 2019, it has exploded.
Yeah.
But before I'm going to get into it, though, I want to ask you a quick question. 2024, what's been the best thing so far that's happened to you?
Cool, blimey. 2024... To tell you the truth, I always answer the question the same way. It hasn't happened yet. You have to ask me that question when I'm on my deathbed, because I think every opportunity I've had has been just as special as the other one. But there's something I do every day that I am really grateful for, and that's basically wake up. Mm. That's what I'm grateful for. When you're able to just wake up everything is a bonus, because there are some people in our society, in our community, and in our families that haven't woken up, are unable to see today. So I think we should be grateful for the small things that happen to us. And those are, we just wake up. So that's me. I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
So we spoke last in 2019, and lockdown hadn't basically happened yet. We hadn't had COVID. We hadn't had all of those things. No. And I think that perhaps we're only just being able to sort of now. I was walking in London today and I looked down and there was this heart with keep your distance. And I was thinking, oh my God, that was the reality, wasn't it, for us?
It was.
It's only now we're looking back with some sort of degree of perspective and looking at culture and how it's shifted.
Yeah.
What would you say has happened when you look at your area? Do you think things have changed? You know, we all went back, didn't we, working with our hands during COVID. Do you, and we looked at craft in a different way, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you think things changed then? And do you think it's kept within society? Do you think we've adopted it more, or we've gone back to our old ways?
I think there's a renaissance of craft and making with your hands that COVID has kind of, it pushed us all to be creative again, which was quite nice,
yeah,
I must admit. And one of the things that I love about COVID, and I know it was a really sad time for a lot of people in the whole world, but one of the things I loved is that we acted as a community. Mm. So we was washing our hands, we were keeping our distance, we were looking out for our neighbours. On a Thursday, we were clapping and cheering for the NHS workers and stuff like that. And it was this kind of social compound bond, I should say, that we created during COVID. And that's the only thing that I am quite saddened about, that we have lost now, that we haven't got that same kind of community spirit that we had back then, which was basically all about keeping each other safe, keeping each other safe, not only with what COVID was doing, but also mentally safe. There was people you was looking out for, that some people, don't get me wrong, have kept those relationships going. But I think with the day-to-day life of how busy some people are, we haven't had the opportunity to reset that community button. And people like yourself who are doing great things and keeping those communities together is what, and I classify myself as a community worker that they've put on TV. So anybody doing any form of community work and keeping people together and keeping their spirits high, I salute those people 100%, because that's what we need in society.
If we do take ourselves back, you know, and I love that you call yourself a community creator, manager, in craft, what would you say you've seen that has changed? But you said there's a renaissance, there's a change, there was a spirit, people were looking to use their hands. I mean, from my point of view, I think I saw so many small businesses starting through lockdown, right? Because people got off the tubes and they were like, oh my God, this is who I am. I actually enjoy doing this. I'm actually going to learn how to paint, or I'm going to learn how to do something.
Yeah.
When you look now, does it... What can we do to get back to that? What can we...
I think we're still there, to tell you the truth. I don't think people have not taken on board with regards to the craft. There's a lot of people who are still following through with regards to what happened during COVID, in the sense of you've learned a new skill, or you watch something on a social media channel and then you just basically said, oh, I'm going to give that a go. Then you found out you're quite good at it, and you felt quite fulfilled when you was doing it. And some people have really carried that on. And as you say, you know, a number of people have started businesses during COVID. But I think craft, there's all different elements of craft. Obviously, there's the heritage craft and then there's just craft in general. And when you look at both of them, heritage craft becomes heritage because you've started something that you kind of like. And then next thing you know, it can make money for you. And then it becomes a career. Then it becomes a passion. Then it becomes your life. And then it becomes heritage, if that makes sense. So all of the crafts, as far as I'm concerned, start with someone having a go. So it's almost as if we have to retrace our steps back to us being kids again. So if you remember when your kids are growing up and basically they come to you, like I always give this story and I love this one, that my daughter, when she was young, she drawed this picture, and it, to me, it looked like a scribble, and I that's the only way I can describe it. And she said, oh, daddy, can you put this on the fridge? And I'm looking at it thinking, well, this is a scribble. Like, well, what is this? And then I said to her, well, what is in this picture? She explained, well, there's you, there's mummy, there's the beach, there's the sun, there's a fire, and there's a cat there, there's a dog over there. And she said all this stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm going to stick it on the fridge. And then a week later, I asked her the same thing. What's in that picture? She said exactly the same thing. So I said, all right, I'm going to leave it for a bit. Left it for 3 weeks. And then she told me exactly after I asked her the question, she told me exactly the same thing again. And one thing, reason why I'm explaining that story is because as a child, you have this creativity that I as an adult might not be able to see it, but a child is just able to just immerse themselves in a scribble that says so much to them. And I think as adults, what we do is we then get bogged down with work, mortgages, holidays, so on and so forth, and we don't really tap into our creativity. COVID, a lot of people were able to tap into that creativity, doing something around the house that they've never had the time for, but work's given them the time off and they can do that. And some people have got that bug and just found that inner child in them that they're like, oh, I can stick with this, go back to the job, or the job is said where you can work from home, which is absolutely brilliant because creatives can work off of their kitchen table. They can work off at the dining room table, or sometimes they're working off of a sideboard. It's one of those things where for me to see the rise of so many businesses, so many creatives out there now, and it's just that, okay, these people are the new heritage crafts, if that makes sense.
It does.
Because these people are then going to go on, influence other people, create successful businesses, more people are going to jump on board. And then it's like, well, we're all making again. Mm. And that to me is, it's like the angels are singing. Mm. That's the way I see it. Yeah.
I
look at you smiling. Look
just,
at you.
Because you just make my heart just burst, because it's not many people like you. I've always said that to you. COVID also, we were using technology. You know, technology was incredible. I mean, I can't actually believe that I had some nights drinking with my girlfriends on Zoom for 3 hours. Awesome. Now you could never even think about doing that. We had the best time. But now what do you think about, you know, when we had online tutorials, didn't we? We had those virtual classes, all of those things. You know, I look at technology at the moment and I feel it's moving so quickly and it can be overwhelming. But in that instance, because we're talking about it, because that's when we last sort of connected, how do you think the worlds of technology and crafts might evolve together?
I think that's a really hard question to ask, because technology is, as it says, technology. And it basically allows one to communicate to a number of people on a massive level. So you could be speaking to someone in Australia and you live in Scunthorpe, let's say, for instance. But with regards to craft, how they can work together, I think it's just the storytelling of craft, because for me, craft is where you're touching it, making it. So technology has this kind of togetherness, but at a distance, if that makes sense. You can't really learn. Well, you can learn from someone, but you can't feel what they're feeling, or you can't understand it. You might be able to do it through video, but I think that the whole thing, like when I was teaching young people how to restore and revamp old furniture, there was an element of the craft that you probably couldn't get it through the video, but you have to watch it. So we classify ourselves as craftspeople once you have done a particular craft for, let's say, 10,000 hours. So those young people had to hand sand furniture for 10,000 hours. And that's an ordeal. And they're looking at a sander that could manage the job in minutes compared to hours. But for me, it's basically you have to learn that. You have to understand that the blisters that you get in your hand, the crust, the whole shebang, then you appreciate the tool. And I'm not saying you can't get that through technology, but I find technology is quite remote and craft is very, there you go, that's the word. Craft is very intimate, if that makes sense.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think it's when you think about craft and that intimacy and technology and the remoteness, it's why when we think about our mental health and we think about restoring ourselves, I say as humans, it's going to play a very vital role as our world gets faster. You know, the use of our hands, the use of our, you know, it's why people use it for mental health and for escapism and for feeling something. And I don't know, it definitely is going to play, I believe it's going to be an antidote to the speed and pace and technology that we're going to have to consume in the future.
What's going to be an antidote? Craft is.
Craft is, yeah.
Oh, 100%, without a shadow of a doubt. And before I continue answering that question, I'm seeing you on this video and people are listening to this and not seeing the video, but I just want to say, Holly, you look really good.
Jay, so do you.
What have you been doing? the oil of Eulet, or whatever you're using, there are other products. There are other products. I'm just showing my age. It's 1970. That's what, I know the beauty regime is that one. I remember seeing
bless
the adverts.
Bless you. Bless you. Well, you'll make me blush. Thank you.
But I do agree that craft is the thing that is going to connect us to, and it's going to sound really bad what I'm saying here, and I'm not knocking technology. It's really good, really useful. But craft is the element that's going to connect us back to the humanity of us being community. Mm-hmm. Simple. Because when you go in a room where you've got a certain amount of people knitting together, yeah. When you go in a room where you see people co-working in the same space and making something and talking about the difficulties that they've had over a cup of tea and then finding a solution within that canteen or like that little tea room and then going back and achieving it, that to me is what community is all about. I don't see how technology can do that for us, because technology has this element of being so distant that it doesn't bring us together. It keeps us apart, and we have the technology to keep us apart. I can speak to someone from my bedroom in Australia and I could be shipping stuff out there or buying stuff from China, bringing it over here and then selling it on. I don't need to meet the person. But me, I like to meet people. I like to talk. I love to have that kind of connection where you get a gut feeling rather than a bad connection, if that makes
you're
sense.
You're like a poet. What is it about handmade items that just feels so soulful? Is it the fact that they're made to last, I wonder? Or is it that you know someone has poured all they've got into creating them? Or maybe it's that you know they are one of a kind, not mass produced, the finest quality and perfectly imperfect. Because that's our passion at Holly & Co. Our marketplace is a treasure trove of unique finds, shining a light on a collective of brilliant founders, or as we call them, our co's, the talented community, putting the co into Holly & Co. I've brought together a movement of creators who champion quality, sustainability, and purpose. A marketplace designed to celebrate craftsmanship, craftswomanship, handmade products, and that special touch of magic that only makers bring. Something truly creative and colourful in retail that we've never seen before. There is so much to share, but I'll let you discover it for yourself if you already haven't. Find us at holly.co, the home of small business, where you can vote with your money to help preserve crafts, celebrate originality, and help people do what they love. Now, back to our conversation of inspiration. I just want to talk about David and Jay's Touring Tool Shed. I mean, what a brilliant title. It's about taking the nation along with you into the making and the creativity of the UK. And it sees you and Sir David Jason as a tinkering twosome hitting the road in your touring tool shed to meet like-minded people who are all sharing this passion of fixing things. Tell me about the experience of filming the show. You and David obviously get along like a house on fire.
I tell you what, that guy... I've watched him as soon as I started watching TV, I believe. I've been watching him for years. And I never in my wildest dreams ever thought that I'd be working with Sir David. And then the opportunity came where I was dancing on Strictly Come Dancing, dancing to the theme tune of Only Fools and Horses. And after you finish dancing, you've got to go up these stairs. You're sweaty, you're nervous, you're panicking, you're excited. And basically, they then show a video of someone saying, well done and whatever. So I'm looking at this video and I'm like, it can't be. And I didn't believe it was Sir David Jason just cracking a joke and saying, well done for doing that dance to the Only Fools and Horses. And then the producer said to me, like, normally some people will charge to do a video because of the nature of the beast or whatever of the show. But Sir David did it because he's a great fan of the repair shop. So when I found that out, we just started chatting and we got on from there on the phone. And then when he first came down to the repair shop, I never forget this. So He comes down with his missus and he opens the door. And as soon as he came out, he saw something on the floor. He goes, Jay, what's that bit of rubbish doing there? What's that over there? What's this? And I was like, hold on a minute. You've only been there 2 seconds and you're already having a go at me. And he's like, what kind of establishment are you running out? So I looked at his missus and I said, what's wrong with him? Like, he's a guest here. Why is he having a go? She said, Jay, he only has a go at people who he loves.
Oh.
And I was like, wow.
Amazing.
So that was it. Me and him hit it off again from there. It was just like,
that
wow.
was right. That was it. And it must be incredible to hear these stories of people. It's behind the objects and the how they have repurposed bits and pieces and taken the history of an object and created something completely unique. Were there any stories and people or projects that particularly stood out to you?
I would say all of them, because the show's basically, it's about upskilling people. Mm. So there's people that come along to us and they have a particular problem. Mm-hmm. So there were so many people that we had met along the way that it's very hard when you meet creatives to say that was my favorite. The only one I could say that really stood out in a way that I was like, wow. Me and David were just in awe of this young man. He's a guy who had been volunteering at an airspace, like an aeroplane mm-hmm. museum. And he was making the parts for aeroplanes that he couldn't necessarily get the parts for, because these were old planes and then new planes. So he was making things to look like they were the real thing, painting them up. And so this guy's 94. And we was there with him and was in his little workshop, and he had like copper pipe, he had plastic tube, he had sheets of metal, he just had loads of bits and bobs. I mean, it was a proper workshop. You mean like this is your workshop? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, it's a bit of a 2 and 8, mate. Like, this is not great. It's it looks quite rubbish in here. He said, but you should see what I make. So then he goes to us, come and see what he's done for this airplane. As we turned around, he's in this kind of big hangar. He had disappeared into another place. All I could hear, me and David heard, are you coming? And I'm like, where's he gone? He had spun around. This guy had, he was like a gazelle. He was moving like the wind. And the one thing that made me and David feel like in awe of this young man was basically, it was keeping him alive. Mm. It was giving him a thirst for life. He was moving like a 20-year-old. If you saw the speed that he went from one workshop to another, we had only turned around and took maybe 1 or 2 steps, he was gone.
Yeah.
About 100 steps already. And it was just like, wow, that's what making, tinkering can do to you. It just gives you that thirst for life. So that I was in awe of him, to tell you the truth. 94 and still
94.
Going strong.
And I think you're so right as well. You know, you look at society and you look at sort of our age and how we are living longer, and, you know, there's a massive issue with loneliness and all of those sorts of things. And again, craft can come through, can't it? To gain that passion, to gain community, to meet someone else who likes tinkering with that, or you can have endless conversations about what other people definitely don't want to have a conversation with you about. It's an amazing thing that, again, it could actually save lives.
No, 100%. I think if you look at the rise of men in their sheds and just the whole community aspect, if you go up and down the country, which we did with the show, and you meet so many different people who are doing things in community centres that are just like, wow. And someone might have had a tragedy or some kind of illness that has knocked them back, and they've just taken a restock on their life and decided. We met a group of ladies that were doing knitting and crocheting, and the ages were varied, and the reason why they had come there were loads of different reasons. But the one thing I loved is that they had created a community within a community that then went out into the community and then supported the outside community. And you're like, now that is the way to do it.
Yeah.
It is a lifeline to a lot of people, and it is a kind of understanding of, there is a loneliness out there in our society. There is a remoteness that's coming with the rise of social media and stuff like that. But there is a renaissance, and there is a rise and a call to arms from the communities that are joining together to say, no, we're going to keep this going. I've even spoken to a number of young people who are going back to analog phones. So their phone is black and white. It doesn't take pictures. They want a break from socials, if that makes sense. They want to meet people. They want to have a conversation. They want to say good morning to someone they're walking past and they don't even know the person. They want to have that. And it's like, it's so refreshing to hear that. And especially if those young people want to decide to start doing some making as well. It's like, wow, that's double bubble. I'm loving it.
Your TV, what you do, I've always thought it's kind TV because it celebrates people and their passions. And over the years, we've had so much unkind TV and the cut down people, they humiliate people. And a little while ago, I spoke to Keith Bimer-Jones and we were talking about this and saying, we hope that this sort of entertainment is almost on its way out. And there's been this shift, hasn't there, in TV programs being commissioned, and we're seeing vulnerability, I would say, more than ever. What's your viewpoint on this? Because I know you've spoken openly before in your book, Life Lessons, about being vulnerable and what it's meant to you in your life.
I think vulnerability is heavily underestimated. Because vulnerability for me has allowed me to grow and to get to the positions that I've got into now. And that was just asking for help and showing that vulnerability. But I think when you look at the rise of certain TV shows, especially reality, I think it all started way back. I think the Big Brother started in the 80s, or no, it might start in the 90s. I think it was. And since that, we've had a rise of these type of shows that are talking about belittling someone or kind of humiliating people. Some people have found that entertaining. I don't necessarily find it entertainment, but as they say, each to their own. But I think one of the things that we should be doing more of is making nice, comforting TV. And that's all I want to do. I want to influence people I'm never going to meet, and also make sure that I'm then kind of inspiring people to either have a go at making something or doing something, or just thinking about doing something for someone that you don't necessarily know, a kind gesture. So I'm very fortunate that I do have my own production company now, and I'm able to say, well, these are the types of show I want to do. And people have asked me to do a number of different shows, but I just say no. I'm fortunate that I can turn those down. Other people, it's up to them whatever they want to achieve. But I think for me to take on board the rise of, let's say, reality TV, that to a certain extent has been quite, it belittles people. That's not me. I'm a community worker, so I would never do that. I want to uplift people in every way, shape or form. I want people to feel like, well, I can achieve this. I can do it. There's enough hurdles, obstacles in life that puts people down. And I don't think TV should be doing that as well. The TV offers a kind of escapism where we can look at it. You might be dealing with something in your normal life, and then you look at TV, you want to feel good. And I think that's one of the reasons why the repair shop has been so successful, because it is a real feel-good TV. It is the grown-up version of Bagpuss. So anybody of an age, they would remember Bagpuss, and that's all we are. We're Bagpuss for adults, but we're liked by a number of people, all different ages. So I think with shows like the repair shop, there has been a kind of rise of other shows about making and putting emotions in there. But I think people are just looking at the kind of outer surface of the repair shop. They're not looking at what is it really that people like about that. And it's because it's a feel-good show. It's a show that has no scary bits. It's just kind TV. And if we was to jump on board with that, I think there'll be more kind TVs that's going on.
And again, I think it goes back to when we say the antidote to what we're experiencing in real life. You know, it plays a really important role. You know, it's it, not just for what it is, but it's breaking the mold. We're starting to talk about kind TV. We're starting to talk about these things, which is actually what we're all crying out for. If we could, we would put it on prescription because this is, we're desperate, desperate. I think, again, if we go back to lockdown, you know, never in my life had I not worked. Never, I mean, I was working, but never in my life had I worked from home, ever. And, you know, I was 17 when I started. And so it is this thing of, we need a break from what we are being pushed into
bombarded with.
Your first podcast with me, you went into your story and the vulnerability that set you free. And we speak about men, and we look at the rise of suicide in men of a certain age, and it's now a number one killer. It's incredible. What do you feel, how can we feel more confident to be vulnerable and not to let that inner dialogue get the better of us when we are being bombarded more than ever with the cookie cutter scenarios of life.
Yeah. It's a really hard one because not one size fits all. Every situation is different. Every person or man that takes his life and suicide, there's different, there's a multitude of reasons for that. I think one of the sad things that we've got in our society is that we don't, and it starts from a very young age, we don't look at relationships. We don't look at community relationships or just relationships in general. We don't have those really honest conversations around how young men should be treating women, how women should be allowing men to open up and talk, just creating that atmosphere where it's like, it's okay to speak, it's okay to cry, it's okay to tell me, you cannot handle this. There are some people who are locked down. There are some people in their homes that don't have any family members, or they might not see a care worker or go out to a shop or anything like that. I'm talking about the older generation. There are some people in our society who are young as well, who are suffering from the lockdown kind of syndrome in a sense of their identity, their sexuality, themselves being themselves. They don't necessarily, well, they're not necessarily allowed to be accepted within the community that they're in. So I think as a society, we need to be a little bit more accepting of each other. Because the reality is we are all the same. If you cut any one of us, we would bleed the same. We have the same organs inside. It's just the outer is completely different. There's a lot of people, much more powerful people than myself, who want things to stay the way they are. They want conflict to be there. They want us to be against each other. When the reality is we can achieve so much when we are together. I often say to people, some people say that they're the 1%ers that rule the world. And I say, well, what's the other 99% doing? And people say, oh, well, they're following, aren't they? And I said, imagine this. You had 3% of the 99% come together who are like-minded to achieve something. How powerful could they be? And they're like, wow. And I said, I'll give you an example, not on the high street. Someone who's created a community of people who are like-minded, they come together and look what they created. Look how powerful Holly and Co is. Come on. It's a case of, there are so many examples in our society of what you can achieve when you come together that we can change the status quo. I don't want to get involved in politics, but I know a number of people will talk about the politicians do this and they do that and so on and so forth. But it's like, well, what are we doing? Why don't we come together? We voted certain people in power. So why don't we turn around and create our own power in the sense of if you're upset with something in your community, speak to other like-minded people, see what you can do. Not necessarily going on a march, but let's clean up the streets. Let's do this. Let's put on a tea party, not when it's a silver jubilee or something like that, just a tea party for us to come together. Create your own community instead of looking for those to create a community for you.
I couldn't agree with you more. It means that we have to take responsibility, Jay. You know, and this is sometimes this is the issues that we face. I'll never forget you speaking about your guardian angel on this podcast. And I've used it ever since then. I've always listened to your podcast and reminded myself about my own guardian angels. So since we've last met, a few people have come into my life and I've turned to them. And I said, Jay said to me once about a guardian angel, and I think you are a guardian angel. You've just appeared into my world and changed it. And you talk about that gentleman who helped you get back on track when you really were going through the very worst. And I think in some ways, you know, you were being repaired, you know, and bearing in mind your experience, do you think that people can be repaired? Do you think that people can be restored? I'm just interested in what you think.
Yeah, of course we can. I'm a prime example of that. And I think when you have, it's hard to explain, and not everybody has to go through this, but when you hit rock bottom, and then there are those people that come into your life, sometimes you have to allow the process of change to change you. And sometimes people are reluctant to take that because they're scared of the unknown. But I think when you've reached rock bottom, there is nothing else that could be done to you. It's just like, okay, I have to go with this. And then you find this path is leading you to somewhere. Because I never knew when, I think it was 9 years ago now, when I was looking for a bridge to crash into, I never knew 9 years later, I would be here, one, chatting to you. I never knew that I'll be on a very successful show on the BBC. Never knew I would have a production company. I never knew I would be friends with Sir David Jason, Dame Mary Berry, Dame Judi Dench. It's like this, and also the King, His Majesty. I never knew any of this was possible. But what I allowed myself to do is have that process of being repaired. Some people will call it repair. I call it me being reborn, because there was a set of beliefs that I had when I fell down and was looking for the bridge to crash into, which was this strong macho man that could achieve certain things and so on and so forth. When I realized I was vulnerable, I was having a breakdown, I was in a place where I couldn't control, me believing that I was a strong, healthy, like really powerful man, that took it all away from me. So as that took it all away from me, I had nothing when I hit rock bottom. So everything that everybody put into me since that time of me hitting that time, it's like, oh, wow. Like, I learned so much. And I believe I was reborn at 45. That's the way I always put it. And then people repaired me by allowing, or me allowing them to come into my world and me accepting what they had to say, good or bad. And it was all an experience of growing, because growing doesn't always have successes. I think if I remember rightly, Usain Bolt said that he trained for 9 years to run for 9 seconds. And when you think of it, the work level that he put in to win that race at that particular speed, it's like, wow, that's some commitment. So what I always say to people is you should have the commitment to yourself and achieve that it's not over yet, because you still have a lot more to go. And there are, and I believe that everybody has guardian angels. It's just sometimes you don't allow them to guide you. That's all.
You have to accept them.
You think you've got it all. Yeah, you have to accept them in. And I think we in our society, we don't really accept the vulnerability, or we don't know it all. Like, I don't know it all. I don't know the answers. I'm still learning right now. And hence why you would often see me at the repair shop or any show that I do. I like to know nothing. And as I know nothing, everything I'm learning is like, wow, really? That's new. Oh, I didn't know that. And I turn up to places and my wife often asks me, Jay, what are you doing today? I said, I don't know. But what I do know is I'm up and I'm ready to just give it a go. I know I've got to be at this postcode, but nobody tells me. And it's like, that is super cool.
Wow. It reminds me of Kintsugi, you know, the idea of that we're flawed and we try and hide our imperfections, and the Japanese art of actually putting gold into the imperfections so that we celebrate the cracks. Yeah. And I think about, I want to ask, you know, you say you were 45.
Yes.
And I'm interested in men getting older and sort of, you know, I'm talking just generally everybody, but, you know, women are more social, men are maybe less social.
Yes.
Men have had different types of careers. You know, it used to be the golf course that people used to get together. The idea at 45 that you were reborn and basically your entire life. So some people at 45 to 55 might be like, I'm coming into the end of my bit now. You know, I'm going to now go and retire, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And we wait and wait. You literally have a different life. The whole of your J life now is completely different.
Completely.
You have been reborn.
Yeah.
I find it hard to communicate that to maybe, and I think this is why the suicide rate, I know obviously I'm generalizing there.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But you know, that there is a potentially with the female movement and everything like that, I do believe that men need to have that feeling that, you know, it's not about the retirement. It's about self-discovery or connection. And I don't know what you feel about that, but there feels men are saddled with so much past. And it's very difficult to watch, actually. It's incredibly difficult to watch. I know many men in my circle who are getting older who I wish could be reborn like you.
Yeah, I wish that as well, because there's a number of men that I've met as well that need to be reborn. But there are responsibilities that they have. There is a commitment that they have to either a partner or children or whatever that is very hard for them to be reborn. And it's even harder to be reborn in the way that I was reborn. So for them to just say, right, this is what I'm going to do, it's virtually impossible. But I think there are a number of ways now. I think I have hope on the young people in the way that I see them communicating, that they are communicating this openness, this talking about the way that they're feeling. I do feel saddened for us as men, because not only you have the suicide rate, you have prostate cancer. That is another killer of men. And it's a really simple thing to do. But when you look at men of a certain age, they don't like going to the doctors. They don't want to bother the doctor with that, is the thought behind it. But really, if you went there, it would get sorted. So really, when we look at what can be done, there's a number of things that could be done. But I think the main thing is allowing people to just open up and talk,
communicate.
Yeah, just communicate. I think, sadly, it can't be led by the spouse. It has to be led by men. And luckily, there is a number of men, let's say in mainstream media, that are on TV and stuff, that are talking about this vulnerability. And I think The Repair Shop is one of those shows that does it, in the sense that you would see Steve cry, you would see me cry, you would see those emotions there. And then it allows people to feel safe to open up about certain things, about probably how they feel, and so on and so forth. So it's a hard shift to do, but there are a number of men my age that really do need to be reborn.
And you guys are bringing the light. And when we talk about vulnerability, you did exactly that when you shared your learning journey about reading to the whole nation. And there's 8 million adults in the UK that struggle to read, as you know, and I'm dyslexic and I'm one amongst them. On the show, you were told that you had the reading ability of an 11-year-old. Tell me what that all was like.
You see, people, this is another thing with me. I find it quite weird. And I don't know why this is, but most people would be embarrassed. And so I was like, okay, I know now. I know why I can't read. That's cool. All right, what do I do about it? Luckily, at the university that I was at, when they told me that, they gave me a load of support. And they basically gave me programs and help during exams. And it was absolutely easy. Then when I got to the age of 51, I decided that I wanted to learn to read and give it a go. But my main mission wasn't really for me to learn to read. My main mission was to influence people I'm never going to meet. So I knew there was a number of people in our society that suffer from dyslexia and are hiding it in some way, shape, or form. Or the only person that knows that they're dyslexic is their spouse. So let's say a plumber or a builder or whatever will be dyslexic, running his own business, then he will bring all that paperwork back to his wife or his partner that would read it for him. So I wanted to do something that made people take an action. So by doing that show about me learning to read, one, showing my vulnerability, but the main thing was to instigate people making a change in their life. So I was very fortunate to hear that the charity that supported me, Read Easy, I've had a 60% uptake of volunteers actually wanting to help people. And they've had, I think it's 55% uptake of men mainly, I think, but older people wanting to learn to read. So I had achieved what I went to achieve.
Oh, and that moment that you read to your daughter.
Yes.
I mean, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen it, have a look at it. It's incredible. Do you think that is one of the things that you're going to give us on this journey, that you're going to become sort of our community worker?
Yeah, that's all I am. I'm a community worker on TV. Let's say, for instance, someone like Sir David. Now, Sir David hasn't done TV shows for a little while, but if you look at him, he is 83 years old. He's driving up and down the country with me, and we're going around meeting people. He's doing something that he's never ever done in his career, which is unscripted. I'm an unscripted king. So basically, like at a repair shop or any show I do, I don't know any script and I just meet the person and we have a chin wag. Simple. It's that. Because as humans, you could do that. You can spark up a conversation, I believe. So I've taken him out of his comfort zone, 83. I've got him to do something he's never done. He's had a career to die for. And basically, he's willing to learn again. And it's like, wow. So what we're showing the wider community who's watching this is like, it doesn't matter how old you are, you can learn something new. And I mean, it was potentially uncomfortable for him at the beginning, but then he took to it like a duck to water. And he would always say, oh, no, it's you, Jay, because you know exactly what to say when I've dried up or whatever. I said, Dave, you never dry up. You never dry up. It's absolutely perfect. So he's one that I admire because of the age that he is. And he shows me when I get to 83, I need to continue doing and learning.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a little, what do they call it? Is it a news flash or
an exclusive?
There you go. That's the word I'm looking for. An exclusive.
Go on.
So the next person I'm about to work with is 88 years old. Yeah. And this person I'm going to work with is someone who has had an unbelievable career. But this person is willing to come on the road with me and start, not necessarily learning things, but to show that vulnerability, to show that development of growth. And this person feels very safe with me and they're willing to do this.
Oh my goodness.
The person that I'm about to do this show with is none other than Dame Judi Dench.
No.
Yes.
Oh my God, you're going to be brilliant together. Shay, just think about that 9 years ago.
Tell me about it.
I mean,
tell me about it.
What? Oh my God, that's going to be great TV.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question from one sort of founder to another.
Yeah.
So you're giving out to all of us. Mm-hmm. We feel it. I'm seeing your success. I clap from the sidelines. I raise banners from the sidelines.
Oh, bless you. So do I.
I'm watching you live your wildest dream. I know how hard you work though. Yeah. Like, properly hard. Do you ever worry about the sustainability of how hard you work or burning out?
100%.
And I know, by the way, I mean, you've got, you're like sort of like, I can imagine you're like 9 years ago. Are you joking me? This is what I would have only dreamt about. I'm not going to talk about hard work, but it is what you're doing is grueling.
No, it is. It really is grueling. This, if you look at my time, I remember 1 year I spent 22 days at my house. I was basically out on the road, in hotels, et cetera, et cetera. I've calmed that down a lot now, but I think...
But that's what it... Do you think that's what it took for you to get to where you are today?
Yes and no. Yeah. What it took for me to get to where I am today, I think I showed something to a number of people that I think we're lacking in our society. We're lacking manners. We're lacking courteous. We're lacking this sense of care with regards to the older generation. This time where you just slow down, just take it easy. I'll give you a prime example. One of the best things I did, I think I did this last year. I went shopping with my mum and dad. And let me explain what that meant. Mum says to me, Jay, I need some eggs and some milk. And so, all right, cool, no problem. Let's go down the shop. Yeah. So we went to the big shop. 2.5 hours later, and I think I was about £300 down because the actual trolley was full. I had the best time. I had the best reflection time. Because what Mum and Dad were doing, well, Mum especially, she was looking at something, looking at the ingredients, then looking at the price. She put it back down and then walked down a bit. And then look again at another item, put that in the trolley. We walked down the other aisle and we looked at about 15 different things as you're going down this aisle. And she's thinking about the thing that she saw on the first aisle. So we go back to that one and she changes it. And it was a constant to and fro. It was 2.5 hours we spent in the big shop. It was kind of like, wow, what is, it's only when the next day I kind of reflected upon it and I was like, you know what? We're going so fast through life with social media, keeping up with the trends, doing this, doing that. I think everybody should adopt a grandparent and you should be with them on a daily basis. Take them to work, take them to your studio, take them with you everywhere. One, it will keep them happy in the sense of they've got someone to speak to, but it will keep us really appreciating life to just slow down, just take it easy. And I think we're moving so fast that we need to have people that allow us to slow down. And if you go shopping with someone who's a little bit older, I guarantee you, they're going to get you to slow down. I guarantee it just happens because they shop the old fashioned way. They normally shop in a market, but now they're in a supermarket.
Yeah.
They want to find the best
deal. They've got the list.
Well, the list is in the mind sometimes.
Oh.
So for me now, 9 years, I never knew this is where I would be. I never knew my vulnerability would take me here. And my manners, my kind of respect for the older generation, my respect for just life and listening to people, that's what's got me here.
In this last episode of the series, I wanted to welcome back Royal Mail for this ad break. Now, if you're a small business owner, then you're likely to know just how very helpful using a tracked service can be. It means you can always let customers know the status of their order with the peace of mind of having SMS and email notifications, a signature on delivery, and even a photo showing exactly where it was delivered. Well, this is just one of the many services available that are designed to help small businesses like yours so that you can focus more on the sales and less on the admin. To find out about them, just head to the Royal Mail Small Business Hub on royalmail.com. Now, back to this week's conversation of inspiration. Before you go, I want to just talk about craftsmanship, craftswomanship, which we've coined the phrase at Holly & Co., and the red list of heritage crafts. Now, of course, as the Heritage Crafts co-chair, another yes. title that you have
There's
acquired.
So many titles, it's a joke.
It's I mean, joke. It's just, you were just Jay, but now yeah. it's like you come with a ton of titles. Mm. There's, you know far more about this than I do. But when yes. I looked at the list, I was shocked to see things such as watchmaking, fabric pleating, scissor making, all on the critically endangered list. Yeah. And some things such as cricket ball making that have yes. now moved to the critically endangered, to extinct part of the list.
Yeah.
Did I spy that you were leading an initiative to bring it back?
Wow, you're good. You're very good. I don't know how much I can speak about this. I don't know when this is coming out, but I am leading an initiative to bring it back. And I wish I could tell you, Holly. I wish I could.
Oh, there my... is some...
I tell you what I'm going to do. When we have finalized what we have, yeah. What we're looking at, you are most definitely going to be the first person to know, because it is wow. is all I'm going to say. It's like,
I am so
to
happy.
Actually find something that is on the critically endangered, like something that is, yeah, if this person passes, and I'm not wishing, if this person passes, yep. that's it. It's over.
That's it.
And then to find like-minded people, as I said about the 3% coming yep. together, you've got three people coming together that are going to achieve something that I think is the way we should all be looking to achieve stuff, not just with heritage crafts. It's also yeah. just a metaphor for life that
but
we should all be coming together
yeah.
and you can achieve something that will benefit all three of you. And it's not necessarily financial. It's like, it's the right thing to do. So that's what is happening. So yeah, I'm leading that initiative. But also another one I can speak about, because you're going to get an invite for this. Another thing that I'm doing is a thing called Jay Blades Presents. And what Jay Blades Presents is this. There are a number of people who are very talented and they might not get a look into, let's say, mainstream because they haven't gone to Central St. Martin's or they haven't gone to the Royal College of Art. Mm-hmm. So I mentor a young girl, Emily is her name, and she, wow, hold on. Yeah, it just got me there. Hold on a minute, Emily. All right. God, blimey. All right, compose yourself. So Emily is a young lady who suffered from brain tumour, epileptic fits. She's also just been diagnosed as autistic and had leukaemia. She's had a number of operations on her brain when she was younger. The doctors told her that she would never draw or write again. She's self-taught herself and she's drawing some beautiful designs, kind of like the William Morris, but like a more kind of updated version. And she came up with this idea. So I said to her, like, she wrote a letter to me, and then she also put it in this book that she had some designs on it and whatever. She wrote this really open heart letter and I couldn't read it. And my wife read it to me and my wife started crying when she's reading this, but she was reading it in her mind before she read it out to me. Emily just spoke about her life and stuff. And I saw her designs and I said to her, well, look, what I'm going to do is I want to pay for your designs to be printed. Your wish is to have them in shops and selling them and stuff. I'm going to pay for them to be printed and I want to get your website and all that kind of stuff. And then when she'd done the design on the website, she had written Jay Blades Presents. And then she put her name underneath it. And then she's named the cards different names, but they're all linked to the different obstacles she's had to deal with in her life. Mm-hmm. So when she said that, and I said, are you sure you want me to present these? I just wanted to pay for it and that's it. You don't. She said, no, I want you because you've supported me. And so I said, okay. I said, seeing as you've done that, I'm going to see if I can reach out to a few friends. So I reached out to a few friends who have retail stores. One of the friends that came back to me was Fortman & Masons. Now, Fortman and Masons and myself are doing a thing called Jay Blades Presents, and Emily will be one of the first people, one of the first people that I present there. This is how we should be working as a community. We should be looking at people who might be less fortunate than ourselves, and how can we lift them up with the dream that they have? And this is what myself and Fortman and Masons are doing. So I believe it's going to be happening over April or May. The reason why I've got a lump in my throat, because Emily is one of the most humblest young people I've ever met. It's like, wow. And she also gets me to slow down. When I speak to her, her speech is kind of a little bit slow because of the amount of operations she's had. But she has this naivety, this vulnerability, this beauty, this presence that for me is what we should all be adopting. So that's coming up soon. But the one with the cricket ball, I can't tell you too much because it's quite...
No, but I mean, Jay, and finally, I mean, just the amount that you're doing and the amount we're going to consume from you. And again, just taking in what you're producing. Yeah. I couldn't let you go without asking you about that. You said, you know, you've made these friends and then you just sort of threw in the king right at the end of your, you know, your mates and everything that you now have. Tell me about that experience, because that was one of the most special things to watch. And it was, it must have been not only just such a privilege, but it felt like you had such a bond. Yeah. And he's, you know, for whatever anyone thinks about it all, he's been a forward thinker for a very long 100%. Time when it comes to the environment, heritage, craftsmanship, craftswomanship. Yeah. So was it a meeting of minds?
It basically was a meeting of minds. And I know that when you meet someone who has the same kind of philosophy as yourself, you just connect 100%. So fortunate for us, we were able to film at Dumfries House, where he does a number of things up there with heritage craft, textiles, the whole shebang. He does a lot, even with gardening, landscaping. I mean, he does it all. He puts his money where his mouth is, and he's been talking about this stuff for well over 45 years, maybe even 50 years now, talking about the rise of plastic bags and what they're going to do to our environment, agriculture, architecture, everything. But a lot of people didn't believe in him. And one of the things that I've always been told when I was growing up was, what you don't see with your eyes, don't talk with your mouth. So a lot of people have an opinion about the king. And really and truly, you don't know the person. And as I know the person, and that person, as far as I'm concerned, wow, is all I can say. So when we first met, it was really, really good. He had invited me up to Dumfries House because I'm an ambassador for the King's Foundation. So I went up there and they filmed us, and it was really, really nice. We had rehearsed a couple of times the actual show, and someone was pretending to be him and what he would say and so on and so forth. The reality is, what happened is, when we met, there was none of that stuff. He didn't say anything that he was supposed to say. So I think what happened was he came down the stairs and we met in this kind of lobby. In the lobby was a load of clocks and stuff. So we met outside this room and he was talking to me, and I was telling me about all these clocks he's got in here. And there was someone in the far corner and she had white gloves on, and he asked her to bring this clock over, and we was looking at it, and then she took it back. And then he turned to me and goes, "Jay, where's the cameras?" And I said, "Oh, sir, they're inside this room here behind us." And he's like, "Well, what are we doing here?" I said, "Well, you started talking and I couldn't actually stop you. You're like the future king of England. I'm not going to say, listen, mate, we need to go back in there." And as we come through the doors, when they started filming us, we're having a laugh together because we was laughing outside that he thought we was filming there, but we wasn't filming there. And then I think that's what kind of broke the ice between me. And then also what broke the ice, which is really, this one blew me away. And there's stuff I've done for His Majesty that hasn't been televised. And I'm really grateful for that, because it just allows us to be connected even more. So I got a call from one of his assistants saying, "Jay, the King would like you to host his 75th birthday party." And I was like, "Excuse me?" "Yeah, he's having it at Highgrove. And we're thinking of inviting people from the Windrush generation, people from NHS and a local community groups, probably about 150 people. They don't know he's coming, but he wants you to, you know, host it first of all, so that people will be excited to see you. But then you go and get him and he comes in." I'm like, "Really?" And he's like, "Yeah. Are you available?" I said, "Yeah, I am available." So we went up there. And there was a moment where I had met everybody, just speaking to them and not telling them that the king's coming in. And then I had to go around again with the king. In the end, he met my mum and my wife. And I'll give you a joke. My mum turns around to him and goes to him, "Sir, you look a lot better close up." And he looked at him and said, "Pardon?" And you could see the people behind him, his aides and what have you, was like, they looked like, "Hold on, where's this going?"
Oh, God.
Yeah. And he said to her, "People normally say that you look better from afar, but you're saying," she goes, "No, no, seriously, you're quite handsome. You're really good looking." I remember taking him outside after we had done the rounds and whatever, took him outside and I said, "Oh, sir, I apologize for my mum chatting you up." And he goes, "No, that was the best bit. I really liked that. That was nice." And he just carried on his merry way. And those are the moments you have with someone who is the king of our country, basically. That's what he is.
Gosh.
And he is, personally, he's normal. So you've got someone from a council estate like me, and then you've got someone from a royal estate, which most people think, nah, those two will never get on. But we have a similarity with regards to heritage craft, with regards to young people, with regards to training. It's just like, it's in our DNA. So of course you're going to connect. So what if you've been born on another side of the pond that someone else is? It doesn't mean that you can't meet in the middle. You should get to know people for what people are. If you have a common interest, it's like, that's half of the battle done already. And then you can just continue talking.
Done. Another example, Jay, that you're giving us. We're now finished this wonderful, wonderful reconnection. Oh, I want to ask you two things. You can answer them quickly. Looking back now, what is your single most valuable piece of advice that you've ever received, do you think?
Be a bumblebee. And I'll explain that. A bumblebee will never waste its time trying to convince a fly that honey tastes better than poo. I'll say it again. A bumblebee will never waste its time trying to convince a fly that honey tastes better than poo. Now, sometimes in life, you're going to find people who are flies and they want you to dabble in kind of like that stuff that they deal with. Because you are a bumblebee and you know within your heart that the honey that you're sitting on is sweet and it tastes good, stay a bumblebee.
I love you. And the last question, what do you now feel you know for sure?
Oh, that's easy. I know nothing. I know absolutely nothing. I'm learning every day. And that's what I know for sure. Because the reality is, once you feel that you know it all or you know something, you could be rudely interrupted with, like what we started this conversation with COVID. We could be rudely interrupted with an illness that strikes one of us down. You have to learn how to walk again, how to draw, how to write, how to speak. So the reality is, learn every day and enjoy every day, because it can change like that.
Yeah.
So I know nothing.
Jay, I love talking to you.
Oh, bless you. So do I.
I just love it. And I can't wait. I'm just going to, the bumblebee, I'm just, that's just going to stay with
bless
me.
Bless you.
I'm going to let you go because you have given us this hour of your time, and I know how busy you are, but you have given again to us. We've all caught up with our Jay, who we're going to see on TV, that we all cheer for.
You.
I know you know it, but you're changing our lives.
No. You were changing, and I've said this to you before, there are a number of people that you change lives for as well. What you created and how you have manifested into this kind of like fairy godmother to allow people to grow and become what some people never ever thought they would become, but you've allowed that. So the easiest way for me to explain it, and I love metaphors, it's kind of like you've acted as an ant, and I'll explain that. So when an ant goes out into the community, it finds some food. Then it comes back to the other ants and says, listen, I know where there's food. Come follow me. And these ants go in a line to where the food source is. Don't get me wrong. You have some ants that come off the line, but they realize really quickly, oh, there's no food over there. Let me join the line again. You are the ant that's gone out there, found something, and then come back to the community and said, follow me. I'm actually going to show you something. And then as a community, as the ants do, if there's a leaf or something that they've got that's too heavy, they all work together to bring it back. That's what you've created. So you're the ant that goes out and then tells the other ants, here you go, come follow me. That's what you do.
Well, it was all about you. And if the bumblebee and the ant, I'm happy. I'm happy at that. You bless your soul. You always make me feel £1 million. And I thank you for that. And I cannot wait to see what you bring the nation on TV.
You.
Jay, thank you. And I'm so happy you were back on Conversations of Inspiration.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.